Hello, it's another week, and you know what? I need to start by saying podcasting is not easy. It takes so much energy and will to record these things and not get instant validation or instant feedback in the scale that I'm used to with YouTube. Like, you just have to record these things and then go out there, and some weeks you get like no one saying anything for a while, and it's like, wait, was that good, was that not? It's just a very different thing. It takes a different kind of willpower, but you know, here I am. I'm not going to comment on world news on this episode, but we'll do it in the next one, because I think this one's going to be quite long as it is, and this one's probably going to be a two-parter maybe, if I don't cover everything that I really want to cover, because it is a lot. So this is my K-pop for Dummies episode, and I'm going to try and cover as much as I can. But we know this is a very rich, layered world with so much to it. So let's start at the beginning. Why is K-pop even as big as it is? So in the 1990s, I sound like those fucking video essays. In the 1990s, Korea had gone through such economic challenges, and they realized there's a lot of possibility of money to be made by investing in culture and investing in music. So they established, which is actually wild that in the West we're losing all these things, but they established the Ministry of Culture with a specific department devoted to K-pop. So from then they made sure they built concert auditoriums, refining hologram technology, and they also, which I didn't even know until today, they were helping regulate norebangs, which are karaoke bars, to protect the interests of K-pop stars. So everything was so intentional. And of course, these companies started popping up. And it must be such a beautiful thing for your country to invest in the arts and the culture, and knowing the importance. A society cannot exist without art and music and culture. And yet, over here, it's everything's about the rat race. And, you know, let's just... You know, you got to invest in financing and buy a house and mortgage. And it's more to life than that. Arts and culture are just as important, as you can see with Korea. So from then, pretty much everything started blossoming. And you've got companies, which I'll touch on later as well. So we'll start with the technical terms of how groups are formed. As most of you will know now as well, most companies, if not every single one, has their trainees. Trainees range from probably as young as 9 or 10 years old, 11, whatever, until usually by 2021 is a cutoff point. You're either too old to debut, or unless they're going for specifically older, mature concept. For girls, I think even though it's too old, I don't think it makes much of a difference for the girls. Mamamoo was one of the groups where they debuted a lot older. I think Sola, the leader, was 22, if I remember correctly. But for boys, I do kind of understand the sense of they're too old, simply because they want to get a good 7 years out of you. And you have to remember, all the guys have to enlist before the age of 30, Korean age, I think, something like that, 30 or 29, something like that. So if I'm getting you at 22, I could get a good 7 years out of you, but you're already now thinking of the anxieties of military, and what if you go sooner? It's just not really great. And you have to remember, these kids are training from such a young age. What their body is at 25 is probably what the average person is at 40. It's gone through so many traumas of training and conditioning, and it just a lot of that strain. It's not like as nimble and as young as you might think. So yeah, usually by the age of like 21, you either should have debuted or you leave that company, and which usually leads them to go to survivor shows. Survivor shows are a big thing in Korea. So survivor shows are like X Factor or American Idol, but in a much different scale. You have, for the most part, a bunch of trainees, and there's different types of survivor shows as well. There's survivor shows where you have a lot of trainees that are not recognized. Some may be recognized just from the behind the scenes kind of like community. And they compete to form a group. You probably have like 99. Like, let's take, for example, Boys Planet, which is airing right now. This first season had, I think it was 99 or 100 trainees. Half of them were like global, half of them were Korean, something like that. I don't barely remember now, but they all then compete through different challenges. They're assessed on singing, dancing. They're assessed on how quickly they can learn choreography and all these things. And every week, and then eventually they go to the stages where people vote for them, and then they top nine debut. So that's another outlet for if you can't make it. I don't think anyone really debuts past the age of like 23 or 24. You know, it's a very rare case if they do. So yeah, those are the kind of avenues and how groups are formed. And most companies, as I was saying, they'll have the trainees there. Some trainees train for as long as 7 years, 8 years, doing monthly assessments, evaluations. And once again, on vocals, dance and singing, rap as well sometimes. Sometimes they learn, obviously, variety show skills, learning how to host and be an MC for music shows, which I'll talk about later as well. It's a very comprehensive training process. Some, they train for 6 months and then they debut. The debut lineup, who knows what the motivations are. They might pick seven members because they look good or they have good chemistry. They might pick five because the chemistry is enough. You've covered the singer, you've covered the roles, you've covered all these things. So there is all of that to be considered. And I will touch on positions as well, because people don't really, they hear these things, they're like, what does that mean? That's how a group is formed, and then they debut, and then they start off as rookie. Every group for 2 years is known as a rookie. You're up for rookie awards, which you can win at the MAMA, which are, what does it stand for? Something Asia Music Awards, but what's the M for? And then you've got MMA Awards, which are Melon Music Awards, and Melon is based on the charts, the Melon charts. It's like a streaming app. So how you perform in that can dictate if you're going to win Rookie of the Year and all these things. And there's so many layers to it. So yeah, in those first 2 years, the rookie years are very important. And then you go on to become just, you know, you've debuted. You're now a group and you carry on for as long as you can, hopefully, if it's successful. Now, and then within the group format and even in group interactions, there's certain terms that people throw out there that you might go, what are they talking about? So you have Sonbe and Hube. Now, oh my God, now I feel like I sound like that girl on TikTok that was like, ning ning, it's the magnet. But I'm not a career boo, I promise. And a career boo is a term for someone who fetishizes Korea so much and they're kind of like so obsessed with it, and they see themselves as Korean. I do not. I am a Zimbabwean, black, British man, trust me. But anyway, Sonbe and Hube is how you address, like I said in previous episodes, hierarchy is very important in Korea. If you've just debuted, or actually before you debut, when a trainee joins a company, the senior trainees who have been there longer than them, they address them as Sonbe because you've been more experienced. And I think this even happens in workplaces as well. There's different ways to address people who've been in the job longer than you, but I'm not sure about that. So from when you're a trainee, a lot of the ones who have just joined, they're told by the seniors, you know, clean the room, pick up this. It's your turn to do this. You should do that. You know, and they listen because they have to. But obviously, that can be a bit of a culture shock for the non-Korean trainees who are like, you got to tell me what to do. And it could be a culture shock for even some actual Koreans as well, just thinking, oh my God. And they get used to it eventually. And also, there's always someone coming after you who's going to be new. So then you get to tell them what to do. So from then on, you've got that dynamic. And it carries on all the way past your debut. If BTS, who are the biggest boy group on the planet right now, were going to talk about TVXQ, they will still say, TVXQ Sonbaenim is my senior. And I find that I'm so used to that, because when I see people in the West, like, let's say, Ariana Grande talking about Mariah Carey and not addressing her with an honorific, it feels so weird. Like, I think it's not a bad thing to adopt to a certain extent, because these people did, trigger warning, pave the way. And they did establish the road that you're now walking on. And I think they deserve some accolades or honorific for that. So yeah, that's a big thing. And then the seniors call their younger groups Hubes. That is also similar to sibling setup. So a young boy calls his older brother Hyung, and the older brother calls his young brother a Dongsang. And that's younger sibling, it's gender neutral. And then the younger girl calls her older sister Onni, and the reverse is still Dongsang. Editor's note here, I forgot to also add that for the opposite sex, the younger boy calls an older girl Nuna, and a younger girl calls an older boy Oppa. So in that dynamic, you have it in groups as well. So you have, so you've got the senior and you've got the hubes, and then within the group dynamic, you also have the younger boys will call the older boys hyung, and the younger girls will call the older girls onni. And that's from as long as you're more than even 6 months, I've seen in some cases, if they're born the same year. Usually if you're born the same year, you're chingu, you're friends. But during, usually once past 6 months, or probably definitely past a year, you have to address them as that. You don't call them by name, which, like I said in, I think I said this in a reaction, I can relate to that because in Zimbabwe, we use honorifics as well. And it's one of the things that pulled me into K-pop, that sense of respect and hierarchy. I don't address, well, with my siblings, I do because they didn't care for it. With my brothers, with my sisters, we do. I don't just call them by their first name. So it's a very big thing for them. So that whole dynamic in a group, I think it's actually quite beneficial to a group's process because everyone knows their role, and it establishes a hierarchy, which is, for the most part, if you get it right, I think can do wonders for group dynamics. Because when you have an older member who doesn't really care for it but gets the respect anyway, I think that does wonders for group chemistry. And then people don't, there's no sense of ego, there's no people kind of fall in line. And then within that group dynamic, you then have your roles and your positions. Now, within most groups, the leader, before in the past, the leader used to be the oldest member by default. But I guess some companies realize the oldest doesn't always have to have the lead, or they usually don't have the leadership qualities. You just assume that because you're older, you can tell me what to do. No. So some leaders are like in the middle of the age lineup. Some are even close to the youngest, like in Enhypen, Jungwon, second from the youngest, right? He's a leader of a 7-member group because he just has that quality in him. Whilst the oldest member, Hyesung, is kind of just like, he plays about, like he doesn't really, you know, whatever, even though in terms of performance, he's one of the strongest ones and he's the strongest vocalist. So, and that's another thing. So some leaders as well, some groups have different leaders. You can have the general leader, then you can have the performance leader, you can have the dance leader, you can have the, you don't really have vocal leader. We need more of those urgently, actually. So, and yeah, so the leader doesn't get paid anymore to be the leader. They just are by name, and it's usually their role to introduce the group. When they're on stage, when they're accepting awards, they will say the greeting like, oh, 1, 2, 3, we are Enhypen, da, 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 da. And then they will also be in charge of being sort of the liaison between the group and the company, usually. But, you know, these days, things are so all over the place. But back in the day, the leader's job was to do that. The leader is responsible for so much, and they're the ones who are going to get cussed out by the company as well if the group is not rehearsing properly, if the product is not up to par. That leader is going to get it. They have got so much of a burden with no extra benefits. It's really not a desirable role. And then they usually as well conduct in the interviews, and they try to do all that. So it's a very significant role. Now, a lot of positions have changed, and a lot of groups don't have positions the way they used to. And I don't agree with this. I think this, some people say this started with a HYBE group called TXT, who were the first to call themselves all-rounders. Say every member can sing, dance, yeah, maybe I guess rap or whatnot. And what that then started to do was to make everyone start to or want to have groups that have all-rounders, because being an all-rounder is such a, it's your jack of all trades and master of all even. So everyone wants to show off and say, oh, so-and-so is an all-rounder. But I think they did that prematurely because that's not the case. Yeonjun, I would say, is an all-rounder, but, and the others have a lot of great strengths, but they don't, it's not all round. It's not, you're not as magnificent as a dancer as you are as a singer. So that started that trend in like 2019, I guess. And from then on onwards, fourth gen, they kind of got rid of positions. They stopped saying, let's delegate you for this role. And you might think, oh, this is a good thing. Then, you know, there's less pressure. No. Because to me, you're then now not picking trainees with an intention for them to excel at something. They're all just okay at something. And I hate that. There's a reason why before, when you had your main vocalist, they sounded like a main vocalist, because you're picking a trainee who, when they sing, you can tell they've always loved singing. They have an intention with singing. They have stability and autonomy and really strong intention in how they sing, because they are singers. You have a Baekhyun, you have your D.O., you have Taeyeon, you have Jungho, you have these people who are singers. And that's such an important role. And now you have so-so singers who just do enough for you for the song to go viral, because you've gotten rid of that position. You've got main dancer. Now, main dancer has kind of stayed, I would say, of all the roles, shock horror, because K-pop has moved towards being very performance focused and backing away from vocals. So main dancers, I feel like they've always been there, or at least they're more openly recognized. I could be wrong, but it's always felt that way to me. And then you have your main rapper, which we do not need more of. Please, the rappers have got to go. As someone who doesn't really listen to rap anyway, because I don't appreciate lyrics and flow and cadences, I could not give more of a fuck. So yes, you've got main rappers. And the main duty of these people... Oh, I also forgot lead. You also have lead vocalist and lead rapper and lead dancer. And it's not lead in the way that we know it. Lead is it, and I love that Taeyeon said this, because I never knew the difference. The lead is leading in to the main. So when the bridge starts, you usually will get that. This is in traditional, if you want to follow traditional structure, the lead singer, the lead vocalist should lead in to the main vocalist now doing the big note. And you see this in survival shows as well. They have to delegate roles within themselves. When they have a challenge, they need to learn the song. They try to compete over the parts. Who wants to be the main vocalist? Who wants to be the main this? And they have to audition amongst themselves. So that structure, I think, works really well. And yeah, the lead dancer doesn't really lead into the main dancer as such, but I think they do support the main dancer. And the main dancer usually, or dance leader, dance captain, will lead rehearsals and dance practices and make sure everyone's in sync, and maybe also choreography as well. They definitely have more input to the output rather than the main vocalist, I think, would, because the song is very... There's more rigid things, I think, with songs, where the songwriter probably wants it to go a particular way, and the producer wants it to go a particular way, and the A&R wanted to go a particular way. The only people who might make a difference, I think I've seen Wendy from Red Velvet, she might add extra harmonies and all these things, and sometimes main vocalists can get that, but it's usually go in there, sing the note, you're going to sing it the best, or you're going to start the song the best. That's your role, and some ad-libs here and there. But some companies and some labels are way more lenient now. So for me, I do think positions are a great thing. I think you really get the best of the best for each role. And people also don't have to compete about the role that they're in, because they know that's what you're here for and that's what I'm here for. You also have the visual. The visual is underrated, in my opinion, because people like to pretend we don't live in a world where beauty is currency. It can bring people in, and a lot of you try to sit on a high horse and like, no, why are they trying to sexualize them? Meanwhile, you're also still fantasizing about another member from another group who is being sexualized, because you can't help that. That's what catches your eye. You don't just become obsessed with someone because they're so talented. Yeah, sometimes it is, but some people you miss entirely because they don't look the part. So visuals play a part, and they can have that repost appeal for strangers who, and their beauty catches people's eye, and it is a talent because not everyone has it. Not everyone can bring people in with just their face. Then you also have face of the group, and you have center. A center and face of the group and the visual can usually be a 3-in-1 deal. They just have that thing. The role of the center, they're going to usually be at the start of the choreo, the middle for important parts, and the end. They are kind of the centerpiece, in a sense, which I think works beautifully, especially in someone like Ian from House of Hearts. I think she really is the center. Even how she walks, it helps to give the rest of the group a visual cue of the energy we're all going for. So it's a very important role, I think. And then you also have the Macne, who is the youngest member, who everyone usually dotes on and looks after, which I find really adorable. And what I loved about K-pop as well was seeing teenage boys having to be maternal to their youngest member and getting them ready for school and cooking for them because they're living together in the dorm. And you've got the oldest member who's probably, let's say, 18, maybe even 19, looking after a 15-year-old. And they actually do raise each other as well. And I think that's actually quite a beautiful thing that we don't really see men or young boys do. Then within the group as well, you also have subunits at times. Within a group, you have two members or three, sometimes four, depending on the size of the group, who have their own music on an album. They do their song or they become a unit away from the group with a different name, but still are attached to the group. That's also possible, which helps with creativity and not having to share as many lines. I actually should have found out why K-pop loves such large member groups. And I think, and that wasn't always the case. SM did start it with Super Junior, which had 12 members. And I discussed this in one of my previous episodes. But I think they may have also been influenced by Japan is known for their 48 members and these large groups. I think they may have done it first. But I find that really interesting, and it may have to play into the whole Confucian society thing I spoke about loving community and collective accountability. So it could be that. But yeah, if anyone knows, let me know in the comments. I'm not going to Google that because I've got so many other things to cover. So yes, that's pretty much as many things I can cover in group dynamics and group roles and positions and why I think they're impactful. Then from the fans' standpoint, you have things called bias and bias wreckers. Your bias is simply your favorite member. And your bias wrecker is someone who keeps gagging you, essentially. And you're like, oh, they're eating. But, you know, you've got your bias. So a lot of K-pop fans will talk about that. I've got a bias. I've got this. And that's what they're talking about. It's just literally your favorite member who you bias. And then we have another term which rattles my reactors is comeback. In the West, we know a comeback as someone's making their comeback. It's been 5 years. This is it. They're back at the top. No. In K-pop, a comeback is just your newest release. I could have released music in January. In May, my fans are waiting for my comeback. And it's so funny. I'm so used to it now. It makes so much sense. It's like, yes, I'm looking forward to your comeback soon, because you're just coming back to us in a more literal, simple sense, rather than you're making a big comeback. Then if you notice, we're using an adjective to enhance the word. I think the Korean, the K-pop use of it makes more sense. Yeah, I'm coming back. I'm going to come back with a new album in 6 months. Please wait for me. That's usually what they kind of do. They won't give you time though. Everything is kept under wraps in K-pop. It's a very big thing for fans to linger and live in mystery. I did it with Hearts to Hearts, and I'm still doing it with Hearts to Hearts. And I think it keeps you fascinated, and it keeps you enthralled in it all, because you're looking for clues, you're waiting for spoilers. It pulls you in, and we know the best artist to do this in the West is Beyoncé. And I feel sad for Westerners, people who, lol, I mean, I do. I feel bad for myself as well, because people who consume only Western music, if you're into pop or whatever, the only artist that will excite you in that sense and is releasing things in an exciting way is Beyoncé. She's the only one who brings that mystique and that otherworldly intrigue. In K-pop, there's so many groups doing that. It's so exciting, and they're doing it in different ways. You're always excited. You never know what's coming. Everyone's going to do a new concept, and everyone's got their different highlight medleys, and they're doing different genres, new choreo, different type of music videos. There's just so much that excites you and pulls you in. It's like nothing else. And that's the part of the genius with it, with concepts. And like I said, with these comebacks, quote unquote, you don't know when your fave is coming back. You're just waiting. It's been 3 months. You're waiting for new content. And it does get a bit consumerist, because a good album should really take a year and a half or 2 years to make. But then that's by Western standards of the resources that we have here. There you have intentional, well-oiled, well-invested in machines. Why should it take 2 years? And that's why the industry probably is as fast as it is. So yeah, we're all looking forward to comebacks, always. And then you have fan chants as well, and Lightsticks and fandom names. Fan chants are, it's whenever people see this in reactions, they're always like, why are they screaming their government names? They just say the members' names, usually before the song starts, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and they're stating out everyone's name, and then they say the group name, da-da-da. I think the BTS's one is Kim Jungkook. I don't even know it, but yes, they will do that, and then throughout the song they will chant a lyric. So if, for example, if it's a gimme da 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 teaches people this chant. Usually after the song is released, they'll release a YouTube video singing along and teaching you how the chant should go. So it's a whole thing. You also have Lightsticks, which I've got my Girls' Generation one, which is by The Window, but it's not charged for people who watch this on Patreon later. The Lightsticks, when you go to a concert, they sync up to the Bluetooth, and their lights, we would have seen this in some clips somewhere, their lights will change color according to the color scheme of the artist, and all these things every artist has their own bong. I think they used to call bongs. They have their own light stick. And then of course you have fandom names, which Mariah Carey did start this with the Lambs, and it just took off from there. Every group has a fandom name eventually. Some don't get it straight away. It usually takes a few months past your debut for you to get your fandom name. So that covers sort of what it's like on the fan side of things, kind of. You also get, now, the reason why also the Korean industry is maintaining such high levels of budget and standards is because there is a good return in the money they're putting in. Physical albums are a big thing in Korea in a way that you would not think we're on the same planet as what happens over here in the West. In Korea, people are selling, the biggest groups can sell 1 million physical copies in a day. Some sell 2 million. Do you know how much? That is so much money. That is so, even the writers get more money because obviously there's a bigger chunk of it than we know streaming makes no money. And within those albums, most albums can cost anything from like £20 to £40, maybe more and much more. And in the album, you get photo cards of, and they're about yay, like a playing card size of the idol's face. And if it's a group, you never know whose card you're going to get. It's just luck of the draw. So if you want your favorite, you might buy multiple albums to hope you get your favorite. It's all so smart. And then you also get a booklet, and you get more pictures, and some people have posters. So you're not just getting a little small CD, you're getting a booklet for the album. So they invest a lot into that, which I think is super smart. And then, speaking of investment, you now have promotion and music shows. Music shows are like a whole, they're so important as well. And I love that this is such an established thing and something I wish we still had. When we had Top of the Pops, and we had TRL, and we had, what else did we have? All those things are so good for engaging with your audience, and they're so good for building your, and having something to perform. We don't have that as much now. It is so important. We have weekly shows from multiple cables. You have music show, you have the show, you have show champion, you have Inkigayo, you have, and they're all from different networks. Some are cable, some are net. It's a lot. And every one of these shows, and you have M Countdown, that's another one as well. All these shows, I'm just going to read my notes so I don't forget anything. So a lot of idols, they pre-record their performances, and sometimes they pre-record at like 4 a.m., 3 a.m. It's crazy, and you're doing multiple takes, and the fans are also there cheering you on at those times. It's crazy. And then your show wins. So then what you're essentially doing is you go on that show to promote your song, but also get a chance to get a music show win, which used to be harder to do back in the day. Back in the day, some groups went years without ever getting a music show win. It can't be that difficult. if you, everything is not lining up. But nowadays, most groups, within a month, they're getting their first win. I think it's kind of lost a little bit of its uniqueness and a bit of its value because it's become so easy to obtain now, or it's become easier to obtain. Now, the wins are calculated by digital scores, how the streaming is going, how your YouTube views are going, how much your song is being Shazammed by people, all that kind of thing. Radio play, I don't think radio play is as big of a thing. I'm not sure about that. And then also votes from your in-studio audience, as well as album sales. And this is also similar to what they do in Survivor shows. Similar thing. Sometimes they use likes from performances to pick their favorite contestants or to see which team has won. And then they use in-studio voting to vote for any standout. So it's very similar. It gets you ready for these kind of shows. And then the wins kind of do signify how much public support your group has. Like Girls' Generation, for example, with GGGG, baby, baby. They won for 9 weeks in a row. So each member had a trophy. Those kind of things don't happen as much now because also before, groups used to promote, I think, for like 6 weeks or 2 months, just performing every weekend. And they'll perform from Thursday to Sunday. Nowadays, they do 2 weeks. Sometimes, most of the time, you do get 3 weeks of promotions. And I think, to be honest, I think 3 or 4 weeks is enough. I'm happy with that. You also have variety shows. Variety shows, you have your comedians there hosting, and you've got musical guests every week. Sometimes they perform their songs, and then usually, so it's not like your interview show. It's not like going on Oprah or Tyra or David or late night shows. No, it's more like SNL. Actually, that's a perfect example. It's very much like SNL. You have your musical show, musical guests. You have your skits. Sometimes you play games, and games are such a big thing in Korea. You play traditional games. You play games to earn food. Sometimes you do these things. And it's also a skill in itself where not every member of the group is going to be great at variety, but it's what they used to really train for as well back in the day because it was part of the package. Very similar to how, I said this in another episode, when Lee Soo-man modeled SM Entertainment and his company in general, he modeled it after Motown. Motown was similar, you know, Aretha Franklin, all the people, they had to learn ballet and learn these things and be a comprehensive artist and not just a one-note thing. Artist development was a real thing and they still do that in Korea. Although even now, even they're starting to back off of that. So variety shows can be so good for getting into and different audiences eyeline, and it's also good for long-term employment. If you're great at variety, you've got to think about your life after the group, and a lot of them do end up becoming hosts of these variety shows, and that kind of becomes their main job. And then, you know, they're now playing along and hosting with younger, newer groups, and it's a beautiful thing to see, and it's a talent that can be underappreciated. But those hosting gigs with the amount of shows that they are, you're going to be good for a while. And with fan culture as well, you can pay to call, to have a fan call. Now, I want these gone yesterday. Some of them are so awkward. I always scroll past them on TikTok because some of the things the fans say is like, you just get secondhand embarrassment, and the idol is kind of like, help me. I think with those, you can win them or you pay a crazy amount of money to be able to speak to them, and it's usually for about 2 minutes. But you know, whatever makes you feel that connection, it works. Then you also have Sasaengs, who are basically their own obsessive, not even a fan, they kind of want to harm the idol. And I spoke about this in another episode about the one for TVXQ who put super glue in Jaejoong's orange juice. No, Yuno's orange juice. And Yuno doesn't drink orange juice till this day because, are you crazy? That's so toxic. Like, so they are terrible. And there are a lot of them, they do invade your privacy. They stalk. They take pictures. They're very nasty, nasty people. And then you have, of course, Korean and international fans. There's a massive divide for the most part. Domestic fans are given priority for a lot of things, which is fair enough. You know, it's domestic. And international fans can be disregarded, even though every company is debuting the group as a global group, but you don't appreciate international fans' feelings for the most part. So do you want a global group or not? We should also have a say. Yeah, it's a weird thing, but a lot of Korean fans, domestic fans, we are starting to mix a little bit better, I guess, but there's still things that they get upset about, and we're like, guys, life, people are dying, and you're getting pissed off about that? They're dating? Oh, no. Now, that's very important to mention. As a trainee, there's certain rules. No dating, no going out, no phone. Some trainees don't get their phones until their debut, which is wild. But if you think about it this way, I'm actually for those rules. I'm so sorry. It's so easy to lose focus. You're either here for this because some people are dying to do what you are doing. Take it seriously. You can avoid those things for a while if you really want it. And the ones that debut, no wonder why they do stay so driven for so many years, because they've been conditioned to focus. They're not thinking about, oh my God, he hasn't viewed my story. Oh, he hasn't liked my post. Oh, and she, oh, she's, who is she with? Is she with him? No, they're thinking about their career and their career only. And then those things will still come, my dear, you can still be ignored in 5 years. You can still be obsessing over someone who doesn't like you back in 7 years. But for now, focus on your career. And I'm not mad at that. But the fans do lose their minds when an idol is seen with someone of the opposite sex. It's like, oh my God. And sometimes they have to break up. Like Karina from Aespa, she had to break up with her boyfriend because people are being so nasty. Mind you, she was, 3-4 years into her career in the biggest girl group. And yet she still had to, there was so much backlash that she had to break up with him. Because some people also thought she was a lesbian. It's like, guys, you just don't know. You don't know these idols. Like, you really don't. Just take things as a grain of salt and let them live their lives, you know? So, yeah, dating bans are, even after you've debuted, unfortunately, are still a thing. And it goes into the things that I said did make K-pop appealing, was it's not sexualized and it's not romanticized, but it can take away from idols having comprehensive lives and being openly open about who they love and who they're crushing on. But I do think if you feed into that too much, it can take away from the art, because now you're talking about, oh, they, so-and-so is dating, do you see how they looked at each other? Then you forget the main product we're here for is the music. So in some ways it can be dehumanizing to take away all that from idols, but it kind of does wonders for the music to just focus on the music. Now, I've also mentioned military service, as you know, and some scandals usually do come from dating, and it can disrupt a group when someone has a scandal, because usually they have to leave the group. It can range from dating before you debuted, like Seunghan in Rise, when he had to leave, and now he's had a great solo career. Tune into my next episode. Or smoking can cause issues. Drugs, forget about it. Drugs, you are out and you are probably going to jail. Sexual assault, yeah, they're a bit more lenient with that. The fucking irony of it. But yes, a lot of those things to varying degrees could mean you're out of the group. And it's sad that the little things can, even if you're found innocent, bullying. Oh, baby, bullying. There was a year, I think it was 2022, I think, the bullying scandals were dropping like flies. Oh, people were apologizing, people were leaving groups, it was really bad. And I think it all came from everyone from Source Entertainment, which is another label. That's a whole other story. But yes, bullying is taken very seriously, because as we know, or people who don't know, bullying in South Korea is next level. The bullying in South Korea is, if anyone has seen The Glory on Netflix, if you haven't, just go and watch that. We're talking people being burnt with curling irons, teachers being bullied by rich kids who can't be told nothing. It's awful. And the suicide rates are impacted by how awful the bullying is. So when an idol has a bullying scandal, it's taken very seriously, because you might think, oh, they were young, like, you know, bullying happens. No, it's a different scale. So that's a whole other thing. And also going back to Sasaengs and all that kind of thing, these idols are built up to be aspirational but also accessible. So in the variety shows, going back to that, a lot of idols also have their individual shows that they film every week, where they're playing games, they're doing adventurous things, they're having a break, or they're having a healing moment with their members, where sometimes they get in to drink alcohol, play game, all that. And they have cameras in the bedroom, living room. The only place you don't have a camera is a toilet, thank God, or the bathroom. But it's all about accessibility and making sure your fans know a very specific image of you. It's thorough, from how they, what kind of food they're cooking, who is the cook, who's this, who's that, who's a supportive person, all that you get to see, or you get to see them go to sleep. It's a lot, and it's very accessible, and that has its pros and cons, but in the bigger scheme of things, I think maybe there's more pros. I don't know. And then in regards to just the general career of a group, there is a 7-year curse, which a lot of groups are breaking now, where 7 years is usually the contract renewal stage. And most groups do sign 7-year contracts. That might be changing now. But at the end of the 7 years, if you've still got all your members, you're about to lose one or two or three. And if not, the whole group might just go. But a lot of groups now have gone past and they've got the full lineup still. Twice being an example, they just reached their 10-year anniversary. BTS, Red Velvet, in some ways, two members have left SM Entertainment. The other three are still there, but they're still there as a group. So you can have a lot of groups, I think third gen groups for sure. And as K-pop has gotten bigger, more are staying, I feel. Whereas before, they'll get to 7 years, not much growth. But now there's more room for, and more opportunities for growth. I think more groups are staying past those 7 years. And speaking of K-pop companies, and I'll touch on this quickly before I end. And I've mentioned them before. You have the big ones. You've got JYP, SM Entertainment, HYBE, and you have YG Entertainment. They do kind of specialize in different things. YG is known for a super rap focused image, and they're my least favorite because of that, because I said in another episode about Tarzan, they do border on cultural appropriation the most. They push that fence and they sit on it daily, and some of them just jump over it and say nigger. So it is my least favorite for that, but they are the best at stage presence, no doubt about it, because they have studied black people so well. They embody, they feel more rebellious to the prim and proper Korean standard of you have to conduct yourself a particular way on stage. JYP used to be known for girl groups, Wonder Girls, Missy, etc., even Twice. And you could say, no, things have changed. I wouldn't say they're as great with that. But now, I would say the biggest strength is live singing. Similar with YG as well, I would say, actually. These two are great for live singing. Everyone, if you watch their tour footage, they are singing live throughout to varying degrees of success. And I think JYP is one of the more poppy groups. No, one of the more poppy sounding companies, even though NMIX do dabble and have gotten more hip-hop, R&B and sound and production. But when you think of JYP, I think you think of pop. But then you have self-managed group, and they do allow a lot of artistic control and a lot of self, I guess, self-management in a way. Stray Kids is very self-efficient. They produce their music. They are very instrumental in being self-produced. Then you have SM Entertainment, who are my favorite, and we have a toxic relationship. They treat their idols horribly at times. They really do. They don't have their back. They don't always look after their mental health. But baby, they make the best music. Objectively, even if you hate SM, you cannot deny what they were known for was being revolutionary musically. And they also are fantastic when it comes to star quality. They find it, but they also train it beautifully. They have idols that are enigmatic and interesting and layered, and they have the talent to back it up, and they hold themselves as kind of glamazons, and you can't sit with us vibes. That is SM. SM is about polish. They do not do things off the cuff. They are to the highest standards. You're getting the finished product. And they have the best singers and usually the best dancers as well. HYBE is, I don't see HYBE the same, because HYBE is like a conglomerate. They are the blanket company, and with multiple subsidiaries below that. You've got Big Hit Entertainment, which are BTS's and TXT's companies. You have B-Lift. I heard it's not Billy, it's not B-Lift, it's B-Lift, like Believe. Heaven Hypen. You have, what are the other ones? Source, who have Le Sserafim. You have, there's so many, and there's so many. You have Mystic Stories under the SM, sorry. But yes, you have many subsidiaries. And so I don't think HYBE has really a culture, and I don't think they really have they debuted, they're going to debut their first boy group, I think. Or is it Big Hit? It's so confusing. So I don't think HYBE, you can really pinpoint their culture to say they have this, because essentially they're made up of many little companies, whereas SM and the other three have their identities throughout, even though they have subsidiaries as well. They're very much the main labels. So yeah, that kind of covers as much as I could. Wow, it is a lot. It's such a rich world. I hope it makes sense to people, and hope you know a little bit more about the terminology and how things are that way. Actually, I will talk about generations really quickly, and I have touched on this before. You might hear terms like first generation, second generation, third generation of K-pop, and I have mentioned it as well, but first generation of K-pop comes from like 1996 to 2002. Second gen of K-pop starts from 2002 to about 2009. Yeah, 2008. Third gen starts from about 2000, and I guess you can say even 2010, to be honest. No, I think second gen was longer than that. Second gen we'll probably say 2002 till 2010. Then third gen is about 2009, 2010 to about 2018. That was a very long one as well. They're getting shorter, I feel. And then fourth gen was from 2018 to 20. That was the shortest one. 2018 to 2023. And then fifth gen started from 2023 till now. Now people are talking about sixth gen. I said, relax. We are 2 years into the fifth generation. So the different generations are marked by also, usually the reason why they were so long as 8 years was when a group is big or a certain era is big, once that group finishes the 7-year contract, you get a new era of groups. In a way, of course, it's groups debuting every year, but the cycle kind of happened that way. Similar to how, with how big BTS is, you can mark the end of a generation with when they all went to the military, or when their 7-year contract ended, there was kind of like a rise of different groups, essentially. But it's kind of like whoever wants to kind of say it's a new generation, they say it. And usually you get a sonic shift as well. Every generation kind of does have a different feel of what was popular sonically then, and what the aim was for a group, whether it's synchronization or whether it's vocals or whether it's style or whether it's rap or all those kind of things. So that's another big thing you will hear in K-pop, is we're in the fourth generation, we're in the fifth generation. So that's that. I hope you enjoyed this, and let me know if you learned something in the comments. Please remember to rate and comment as well. And I'll speak to you next time. Bye.